Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word. Please turn to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to talk about, and for an obvious reason that you'll figure out immediately, we're going to talk about the Lord's words about settling with your adversary, even when you're on your way to court. If at all possible, settle quickly. Like, as much as you are able to live at peace with all men, you recognize that scripture, as much as you are able, live at peace with all men. Sometimes there's necessary conflicts. But then at other times, we need to use the wisdom God gave us and decide how to deal with a particular conflict. So Matthew chapter 5, verse 25. And you'll recognize this verse. And then we're going to back up and look at it in context. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Now we're going to back up and talk about it, and then we'll go back to the Old Testament and look at something in Deuteronomy related to this. But before that, I'd like to tell you a couple related stories that have to do with, for example, intellectual property and whether it's right or wrong for Christians to just take, say, music on the internet because, hey, I like the music and they sell it on iTunes, but I could get it for free. Or software that maybe costs $400 and your friend has it. So $400 is a lot of money. So here, I'll just copy the disc. Or movies that you got to pay $10 to go see or buy it on a DVD, but I could download it for free. We have on the air for these many years talked about how Christians need to honor God's command, do not steal. And that includes intellectual property. So when someone has something that they've created, let's say they've written a book, you could buy the audio copy, download it online, but then you make copies of it and give it to all your friends because, hey, here's a fun book and you could all listen to it for free because I'm just giving you a copy. Is that something that honors God? And so we've long explained that that does not honor God, that dishonors God. And so that topic comes up occasionally as it is in the news because, for example, Hollywood has been somewhat aggressive. So have some software companies, and they have taken random people, and sued them and received judgments to the full extent of the law, which sometimes is $10,000 or more per infraction. So there are a couple sort of normal people who just downloaded a couple movies for free, went to court, and got hit with judgments of tens of thousands of dollars. And they're just normal people. It's not like they download thousands of movies and distribute them. They just thought they'd get a couple movies for free. At Denver Bible Church, we teach that there is a God, that God has revealed to us right and wrong, and we need to humble ourselves and believe Him and not disobey Him by doing what we think is right. We should learn what is right and do that. Now, regarding intellectual property, it's not as easy to explain to people as physical property that you could hold in your hand. And because of that, sometimes there's times where even people who love the Lord will wonder and they'll say, well, is this right or wrong for me to do this? Because, for example, some songs pass into the public domain. Some books pass into the public domain. And so then, is it wrong to use the lyrics of that song without paying royalties to the copyright holder? Or is it wrong to sell copies of a book, say written hundreds of years ago, that has passed into the public domain. And so our basic understanding as Christians, and even the law of the land, is that no, that's not wrong. If something has passed into the public domain, it's perfectly acceptable to use, to copy, to distribute, even to sell if people will buy that from you. Now, I'd like to give you an example, even before we get into the text, of something that happened to our church years ago, not unrelated to the current lawsuit about our radio show by the evolutionists at National Public Radio, who are suing us. And we think that using our name is completely justifiable based on, for example, the God-given right to free speech, because if you trademark something that's descriptive, like Sunday school, and a clerk accidentally, wrongly gives someone control of the phrase Sunday school, does that mean other people should not use it? And the answer to that is no. Some government clerk made a mistake issuing ownership of a phrase that's descriptive. And that should not be defensible. And in principle, it's not under trademark law, even in the U.S. Well, there was another church in Denver named Denver Bible Church. So they came to us, and our name is important to us, as names are often to many people, because we could, as we often do, put out a press release, make a public statement, and it's easy for people all over the country to remember where they heard it, because Denver Bible Church is so easy to remember. And so we put a lot of effort into promoting the name. We followed all the rules for protecting the name. We got a website. We got a phone number. We let the Secretary of State know. We did everything you're supposed to do. We first did a search to find out, is there a Denver Bible Church? And there was none. Well, it turns out, lo and behold, there had been one for some years downtown Denver, but they had never registered their name with the Secretary of State, which is the minimal basic thing you do to let people know you exist. They never got a website. They never got a phone number in the name. So unless you knew them personally, you couldn't find that they existed. So they came to us and they said, we're rather upset at ourselves because we did nothing to protect the name. And you guys, not only are you operating as Denver Bible Church, but you did everything you should do to let people know and to protect the name. But we're Christians. You guys are Christians. We're really upset about this. Could we talk about it? We'd like the name back. So we said, and it took us all of an hour to decide between all the elders. We said, of course, we will give you the name. And they had indicated to us, they said, we have no legal standing to this name, but would you just give it to us as Christians? So we talked about it and we said, yeah. Does anybody remember what we changed the name to at the time? Shout it out if you remember. Damascus Road Bible Church. Figured we're some Arab fellowship, you know. So we changed our name, which involved a lot of difficulties. When we gave them the name back, we said, we only have one concern. We're willing to give it to you guys, but we don't want to give it to somebody else. So would you protect the name? And please make sure you protect it, because if you don't protect it, then anyone, including us, we could take it back. And so they said, of course, that is so reasonable. We will register the name. We'll do the normal things you do. So we let a year go by. And after a year went by, they had done nothing to protect or register the name. So we called them and we said, we want to let you know we're going to take the name back because it's been a year. We love you guys. We care about you. And they were a bit angry. We had a good meeting with them. And they were so upset. They said, how could you do this? We said, you mean how could a Christian abide by an agreement? Is that what you're asking us? How could you do this? We said, we think that it honors God to abide by an agreement. We realize that you don't prefer this, but you should respect our decision to resume using the name. And so fast forward now 10 more years and here we are, Denver Bible Church. And the name is very effective when we do get interviewed or put out a press release or are involved in some kind of outreach. People tend to remember who we are. And that's helpful for that reason. Now, let's back up in Matthew chapter 5. We'll come to this verse 25, but I'd like us to get it in context, all right? Let's go all the way back to verse 17. Jesus is speaking, and this is the Sermon on the Mount. You could go to Israel today, and you could go to the location, which is the likely location, or if not, a very similar nearby location to where Jesus said this. And as the hill slopes up gradually, you could see how a lot of people could stand there, even without a modern sound system, and they could hear him, because they would take advantage of the natural terrain so that the sound would work like in an auditorium. And so Jesus said, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Remember, of course, part of the law is thou shalt not steal. So that's very relevant then when you're talking about property, including software, movies, songs, or other copyrighted material. So Jesus said, "I didn't come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away," and they will one day, when God is about to create the new heavens and the new earth, "till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled." So a jot and a tittle in our English alphabet, you know how you'd cross a T and dot an I? And if you wanted a name for the dot of the I or the little bar that crosses the T, that gives you an idea of the meaning of those words for Hebrew. Just one little part of a letter. Not only will the law be fulfilled, but even the jot and the tittle, to the least detail, the law contains what God wants it to contain. So not one jot or tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So did God, through Jesus Christ, who's God the Son, did he teach Israel here in the New Testament that they were supposed to keep the law? Yes, he did. In fact, the whole law, the greater matters, the least, everything from do not murder down to tithing, circumcision, the Sabbath, the dietary law, Israel was to keep the law, and the whole law, everything that applied, they were to keep. "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." So now here is the beginning of the more immediate context of verse 25. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder." Now, if you've ever thought about the Ten Commandments, you could see that a part of it is the foundation of a criminal code for any nation, anywhere in the world, and throughout human history. Part of the Ten Commandments. Not every command is part of the criminal code, because other commands, if they were violated, that would be a sin, but not a crime. There's a difference between sins and crimes. Laziness is a sin, but the government should not have the police come and arrest you and take you to court if you're lazy, right? That's not inherently a crime. But there are some behaviors, some sins that are also crimes. "You shall not murder" is part of the Ten Commandments, and it comes from the part of the Ten Commandments that provide the foundation for a criminal justice system. Not only what the crimes are, but then with effort toward due process of law and a concern to show motive when someone is accused of a crime. So when I mentioned earlier, we'll go back to Deuteronomy chapter 5. We'll look at that very briefly because that helps us understand this context. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment." Now, the personhood movement is an effort to enforce God's command, thou shalt not murder. That's the personhood movement. Back when some of us were in the rescue movement, which predated the personhood movement, but it likewise, it was personhood compliant, and it was trying to stop the killing of innocent children, Christians would go to an abortion mill, kneel and pray in front of the doors of the clinic, and close down the clinic for a day. And so when moms came to kill their baby, they couldn't get in. The clinic was closed. Many of those moms would be witnessed to by sidewalk counselors. Many of those babies were saved. Well, back at that time, I ended up being arrested at a Boulder rescue with many others. And I was one of a number who spent time in the Boulder County Jail, a couple months or so. And while I was in the jail, it was like being at a men's retreat. It was all beautiful wood, oak furniture, foosballs and basketball. And we took outward bound kind of trips up in the mountains. We had llamas. We'd cook our lunch and a campfire. I mean, normally you have to pay for all that, right? Well, we got it for free. And I was in the yard of the Boulder County Jail because the inmates grew, you know, a garden, of course. What else are you going to do if you're being punished? Grew a garden, and I got to, whatever, till the garden. And I'm walking across the yard, and I didn't even realize, you know, I'm not paying attention, walked on top of a sewer cover, and all of a sudden, I was down in the sewer. The sewer cover flipped when I stepped on it, and it was big, and I went down, hit my two shins on the metal rim, injured them severely, and went right down the shaft. And my attorney said that we need to sue the Boulder County Jail and the county because previously inmates had been injured on that same sewer lid that was never repaired. And the jail doctor admitted that previous inmates were injured there, and so it was gross negligence. And so I talked to our pro-life attorney and said, you know, if I do that, it will confuse the issue in the mind of the public because we're here to stop the murder of babies. And then people might think that we're really just here for money. And so over the years, I became aware that that was actually a problem in part of the pro-life community, that some pro-lifers would provoke the authorities to arrest them so that they could have a lawsuit and fund their ministry. And I saw this firsthand. I was involved in a lawsuit where there was a financial settlement from Metro State. And there were three plaintiffs. We each got money. And I asked our attorney to take the money that I got because I thought it was basically gotten unjustly. When I realized that the guys who provoked the arrest did so routinely at universities around the country to fund their ministry. So it wasn't just they're preaching the gospel, they're going overboard to provoke the campus police to arrest them. And so we realize that our actions communicate a lot to people beyond what we want to communicate. So as pro-lifers, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, like you fool, you idiot, for example, in English, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says you fool shall be in danger of hellfire. Jesus spoke more about hell than you read in the Old Testament. The sum total of the teachings of the torment of hell come in the Bible, not from the Old Testament, where many think God was mean, but in the New Testament, he became nice. They come from Jesus Christ in the New Testament primarily. That's where we read how terrible it is to go to hell and live forever apart from God. Jesus is saying that it goes far beyond the act of murder. God looks at what is in the heart. And so if you are angry without cause, just like if you covet something your neighbor has, you covet your neighbor's money. Maybe your neighbor is your boss. And you think, why should he make all the money when I'm doing all the work? And you then covet the money he has, and eventually If that is your heart attitude, given the time and opportunity, what will you do as an employee? Eventually, you'll steal. Eventually. If you lust, eventually, you'll destroy a family. If you are angry without cause, that bitterness would eventually, given the time and opportunity, lead you to kill an innocent person. So that's why Jesus goes right to the heart. He says, look, it's not just your actions. Your actions are significant. But you know, God looks at the heart and he can judge the heart. And so that needs to be our concern. God, search my heart. See what's in my heart. Why are we fighting? You know, are we fighting some other group over whatever issue because we're guys and we're macho and we just like to fight? Or are we fighting because it's wise and just? Sometimes things are just, but they may or may not be wise. And so as Christians, we want to take all that into account. And so now, does that mean it's wrong to call someone a fool? No, if you're angry without cause, you're sinning. If you call someone a fool without cause, you're sinning. The Bible says that those who reject God's existence are fools. The Bible repeatedly calls people like that fools. Jesus does. Paul does. We see that that is a fundamental biblical teaching. Now, if someone is a fool and you have the opportunity and it's perfectly in context and you don't tell them that, is it definite that you're helping them or is it possible you're hurting them? It's possible you're hurting them. So it doesn't mean at every instance, whenever vindicated, we call people fools. But we ask God for the wisdom to know when do we show people how desperate their situation is and their commitment to ignorance. And so we see here, verse 23, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar. So you are in some kind of a conflict with another brother or sister in the Lord. And you're in the middle of a worship service, or you're about to give money into the box in the back. And you remember that there is a conflict and there's something not right about that conflict in your heart, in your mind. And you say, well, I don't have to worry about the conflict. I'm here to worship. Jesus is saying, hey, this is significant because you're violating God's command, do not murder, if in your heart you harbor this unjust anger. Now, if you realize, you remember there's a conflict, but in your heart, as searched by God, you are not guilty, and you love that person, you want to reconcile, but they will not, then this doesn't apply, right? Does this apply if you've asked God to search your heart? And we all easily trick ourselves into thinking our motives are pure. That's the normal human condition. But if your motive actually is pure, then is this applicable? You have to stop what you're doing and go and offer a reconciliation? No, of course not. So you're at the altar and you remember there's a conflict. Leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. You see the priorities and what's important to Jesus Christ? Agree with your adversary quickly, even while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. So we are being sued right now by National Public Radio's host, Ira Flatow, of Science Friday. And we have talked this through for years. We recognized 5 years ago that there's a good chance Science Friday may sue us, because they'll be offended that we are criticizing them simply by the name of our show. Real science implies that there's some kind of science friction or something. There's something else. They're not real science. They're atheistic, evolutionary, Big Bang science fiction. So we recognize that. And thinking it through, we recognized also that there's an opportunity in this because we want not only them, but many others to know that science based on atheism is not real science. It's a lie. And it's scientifically ignorant. And so we thought this through and we realized, you know, there's a risk to this because they could sue us. And if they sue us, there's also a risk that the judge would rule in their favor because that's typically what judges do. Not always, but often they rule against the Christian outreach for the atheists, against the Christians for the homosexuals, against the Christians for the abortionists. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens frequently enough that that's a real possibility. So from the first notice of this lawsuit, now going back about a month ago, talking it through with our wives, Cheryl and Fred Williams' wife, Sandy, we met initially to talk this through. And we said that as best we can tell, our egos are not in this. We couldn't care less what the name of the show is. This is an opportunity to tell more people about the truth that science affirms the Bible and science shows that the belief in evolution, the Big Bang, and an old earth are false. And so it's an opportunity. So thinking this through and realizing, of course, the risks in any lawsuit are significant and the possibility of us losing is significant, we have so far won each little baby step of the case. We succeeded in getting it moved from state court to federal court. Then they asked for an immediate temporary restraining order, and we disagreed and filed our counter motion. The judge rejected that. They were upset that we maneuvered our way out of following state court procedures. They were upset. We should be punished for that. The court disagreed. And then again now, they've asked for a restraining order at the beginning of the process, and the judge again turned them down. So each little baby step of the case, we've prevailed. So we think that that's a good time to offer a settlement. So we have, through our attorney back in Manhattan, we've offered them a settlement. In fact, we said to them on the phone the first day when they were suing us and sending all the papers to the wrong addresses, Ira Flatow's attorney, his office building lost their phone service because of Hurricane Sandy. So I was talking to a reporter at the New York Post. And I said, well, I want to reach him. She said, well, their phones are out. I said, well, you're a reporter. Don't you have his home phone number? And she said, well, I have his cell phone. I said, can I have that? She said, sure. So I called him on his cell phone and I said, you're suing us, but you're sending the papers everywhere but to us. So here's our address. And I gave him the address and I said, I just would like to let you know we're not emotionally wrapped up in this. And if Ira, if you would like to talk to us, we're perfectly willing to talk about this case. So what we have offered to them is that we would change the name of the show, but we're asking if they would accept that our archives could stay in place and stay functional so we don't have to go back and change 1,000 links on the internet and hundreds of radio programs. So we'll stop using it. We won't create more Real Science Friday branded programs and materials. And would you guys, you know, be fine with our archives staying as they are? And that's it. If pride is a factor, they'll say no, right? If pride is a factor. If they recognize that we're not naive when it comes to courts. I mentioned Ken's name. I hope you don't mind, Ken, in our filings. And I said, look, our small church has been to court so many times. You need an abacus to count it up. And we've literally won over 100 cases, literally in the Colorado, Denver area, just our church and our small circle of activists. Over 100 cases, including a number in federal court. So if you want to sue us, that's fine. But since we do zero business in the state of New York, the courts will probably move it to Colorado. And if it's moved to Colorado, then we have a network of pro bono attorneys, civil rights attorneys, and, you know, have at it. So we don't know what they're going to do, but Lord willing, so that we could keep focused on what is our major mission, we've offered this settlement and they could accept it. And if not, that's fine. We'll proceed. But then the court will also know that we offered a settlement and they turned it down. So when they argue that they're really being hurt badly, the court will say, well, then why didn't you accept? They're going to stop. And the court already said, we're not going to tell them to stop, and they offered to stop. So anyway, let's now return to this. So when you're dealing with your adversary, agree quickly with him, lest it all backfire. Because if you go to jail, assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there till you have paid the last penny. Let's go back to Deuteronomy now, chapter 5. Paul, when he was falsely accused, he made it a federal case. He appealed to Caesar. And he was in the right, although it didn't go well for him, and eventually he was killed. Right? So you never know, right? It doesn't matter if you're in the right or wrong. When you're in court, it could easily go either way. A lawyer is someone skilled at the circumvention of the law. So there's no guarantee that just because you're right, that you then will prevail. So back in Deuteronomy, if you notice, even just without reading, you might be able to just look at the page, and if it's indented, you might be able to tell this is the Ten Commandments. But it's not the original Ten Commandments. They're in Exodus chapter 20. That's the law, right? In Exodus. Well, Deuteronomy means the second giving of the law, the retelling. Deutero, namas is law. Deuteronomy, the retelling of the law. So here it is again, reinforcing for us how important this is to God. So here's the Ten Commandments. And I mentioned that some of these commandments are the foundation of a criminal justice system. And they are verses 17, 18, and 19, with verse 20 being the foundation of due process. And verse 21 going to motive, which often helps to convict someone of a crime. And so verse 17, you shall not murder. 18, you shall not commit adultery. 19, you shall not steal. These are the basic crimes that human beings commit. Now, there are covenant theologians who think that man's law should reflect God's law, but they're not dispensationalists. They're covenant theologians, like Presbyterian Calvinists. So I've asked them, well, write up a criminal code based on your beliefs. Write what the criminal code should be that the police should enforce. They can't do it. They can't do it. Because they're not dispensationalists, it's too confusing for them how to apply the Old Testament law today. Because many of the Old Testament laws required priests, prophets who could speak to God in order to enforce it. So if they're going to take some of these laws that required God's input, how are they going to do it? What are they going to say? The mayor needs to ask God which one of these two people is guilty? They won't do that. They don't do it. As dispensationalists, we know that the law has changed. God changed the laws in certain specific ways. And so we're able to, and I have produced a criminal code that we've published from time to time on the internet. That's about 2 pages long. And it could replace literally tens of thousands of pages of criminal code in America. Just 2 pages. Based on these 3 commands. The next, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, which is itself a crime and tells us, that's perjury, that we have the right to due process. Because if somebody lies about you in court, they're committing a crime, they should be punished. Because they're violating your right to due process. And then the last, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not covet your neighbor's goods. And this goes to motive, right? You find out there is a murder. And this guy, well, what if this guy? The evidence seems to point to him. But he doesn't even know, you know, why would it be him? And then you find out he's having an affair. And he killed the husband of the woman he's having an affair with. Then all of a sudden, motive, which we get from this command, becomes so obvious. Motive is so obvious how it relates in criminal justice. So notice this, you shall not steal. So I want to close with this, that When God said, you shall not steal, people were not making movies. They were not making software programs. They were not writing music and recording it on MP3 digital format. They weren't doing that. Today they are. And today, if someone is selling a book that they wrote, they spent 10 years writing, and it's a popular book, although you could get it in audio form, PDF, you could read it, hear it online for free because people are copying it and giving it away for free, then you're stealing from him the same as if you saw his wallet, opened it up, and took money out. It's the same. Although that intellectual property theft can easily mount up to millions of dollars. It does. Where it's usually hard for an actual criminal to steal millions of dollars. But via intellectual property, it's a lot easier to steal a lot more. And our law makes a distinction between misdemeanors and felonies. And so Christians easily are stealing hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of material. One of our listeners in Michigan got angry at this message, and he said it's ridiculous, this belief that you can't copy movies and software, because he said it's not possible to steal if they still have it. If they still have something, then you can't be guilty of stealing. So I asked him, well, how about their signature? How about their signature, which you put on pieces of paper? They still have it, but you're stealing from them, misrepresenting the truth. How about printing dollar bills or $100 bills? Every time you print one yourself, you're robbing everyone because you're diluting everyone's money. And you're suddenly a millionaire. You stole millions of dollars from the nation corporately. And so just because they still have their $100 bills doesn't mean you didn't steal if you made illegal copies of those bills, or if you illegally copied their signature, or illegally copied their movies. So as Christians, our standard is higher than the law of the land. Our standard is God himself, God's righteousness. So in every decision, every action that we partake of, the question is, am I honoring God? Am I honoring God? And if you are, then what you're doing is just. Then there's a second matter. Is this the wisest thing I could be doing? Is there something else that might be wiser? That's even a deeper level of spiritual maturity. Hey, this is Bob Benyar. If you would like to hear more, you could go to our store online or call us at 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or go to kgov.com, click on the store, and then you can get our Bible studies, or go to the subscriptions where you could subscribe to our sermons and our Bible studies. You could get really fun verse-by-verse studies or topical Bible studies. I think you'll love it.